this evening. Let's take our Bibles and turn to Psalm 90. Psalm 90 this evening. I have, of course, been thinking about preaching a message to encourage and to have us trust in the Lord. And again, all the music has just kind of been directed toward that. And, as Pastor Brown mentioned, we have a very important event coming up Tuesday. And I know that that's on our hearts, it's on our minds, by the way, and also it's hard to get away from it, isn't it? I know that some of you older folks in here can remember the glory days when there were only three channels, and the remote control was the kid getting up when the parent told him to and telling him to change the channel. There was no remote control. The nice thing about those days, if you recall, is that when the news ended in the evenings, that was it. And you didn't have to have a 24/7, 365 news all the time. That simply, I think it invades and pervades everything. And I think that is actually to our detriment. I don't think that them trying to keep us informed 24/7 is necessarily a good thing. It's nice to get away from it for a while. In fact, I was going to encourage you to do this, that after Tuesday, take a break from all the news for a while. And as your pastor, I want to encourage you, and I'm preaching to myself this evening as well, let's this week get back more into the Word than we have been. I think it's necessary. I think that it's important for us to, again, focus our attention on the eternal, because all that we are going through, and I'm not downplaying the significance of it, but all that we go through here on this earth, my friends, is temporary. And I think that we've got to focus our attention back onto the eternal. And I hope that you will do that. And so I want to encourage you to get in the Word somewhere, sometime, and stay there, concentrate on that, spend more time this week in prayer and in the Word. I think that's important for all of us during this time, no matter what the outcome may be. I think we're going to see some difficult days ahead of us, no matter what the outcome is either way. We're in for some trying, difficult times, and we had better be prepared for it. We had better be, again, rooted and grounded in the Word enough so that, again, whatever comes our way, we will trust in the Lord. I often think back upon the great brothers and sisters in Christ that I had an opportunity to meet and minister to, and I went with my dad to Poland a couple of times, and this wasn't too many years after the Iron Curtain had fallen, and many of the folks in that church had experienced what it was like to be a Christian under that. And let me tell you this: they were not defeated. They were not people who felt sorry for themselves. They were not Christians who were whining and complaining about things. They had gone through some very, very difficult days under the Soviet regime. And yet I would say, in a very large part, they were probably maybe more joyful, more appreciative of things than many American Christians, having gone through very, very difficult, as I say, circumstances, even down to the most mundane thing that we take for granted. Brother Jan Tolvinsky, who had a school there and, of course, a church that's still going on, his son is now pastor. Dr. Tolvinsky passed away several years ago, but his son, Adam, is the pastor of that church now in a suburb of Warsaw and doing a great job, from what I understand. I remember Brother Tolvinsky telling us that under the Soviet regime, it took them 9 years to get a telephone. They had never had a telephone, and they had to sign up in order to get one, and it took them about 9 years to get a simple telephone. And of course, we don't even think about something like that. It took him years to get a vehicle, it was kind of a joke in our family because he finally got one after many, many years, and it was this little tiny green, pea green, small, you can imagine the cars in Europe, is a pea green little thing. I don't even know what the model of it was. And here's me, at one point when we went over, it was me and Mom and Dad and Brian all packed into this little tiny car, and him driving like crazy and mad around the streets of Warsaw. It was very interesting. When you ride with someone in Europe, you've got to have a lot of faith, okay? It's a very trying thing. But anyway, I'm here tonight to encourage you and to help you to see that God is in control. And that's what we have in Psalm 90. And we're going to read some in a moment. But, you know, it's interesting that on a small street in the city of London, England, one can find, I think, one of the perhaps most concentrated places of history in this one little section on a street in London, and you would never think about it being where it's located, but here it is. And it's interesting that on one side of this street you have Wesley Chapel, which is where John Wesley both preached and he lived. There's a house right adjacent to the chapel there. And then you walk right across this street, and there is a historic cemetery, and it is called Bun Hill Fields. And it contains the markers and the places of rest of some of the most significant people in English history. Daniel Defoe, John Bunyan, and many, many others are buried in that location. And I've had the opportunity to go there and to visit that place. And one individual, interestingly, who is also buried there, and you can't go and walk down the rows of the tombstones, unfortunately, because as you can imagine, many of the tombs would, or the cemetery plots would probably be vandalized, and the gravestones would be vandalized. So they have it kind of barred off, but you can see them at a distance. And one of them under a tree that probably many don't even see or notice or care about is a man by the name of Isaac Watts. And he is buried there. And some, of course, those of you brought up in Christian homes, you know who he is. He is considered the father of English hymnody. And Watts wrote over 700 hymns. And in 1714, in the time in which he wrote and lived and ministered, Parliament passed an act called the Schism or Schism Act. And it was designed to limit religious freedom and to force dissenters to conform to the English church. And by the way, that was not the first time that they had done this. It happened in the century previous, in which in one fell swoop, in the late 1600s, there were literally thousands of ministers who lost their pulpits or were forced from them in one day. So again, I say all that to say this also. We think that we have it bad and we have it difficult, and we may whine and complain and say how hard it is. Look, we go through nothing that some of those who have gone before us have not experienced or experienced worse. We have a lot to be thankful for. Now, some of these things may come. We don't know. We don't know what history holds. But again, we, like these men, we know who holds the future. We know who holds the days before us. We can't see them, but we have a God who does. And that's a wonderful thing. But during this time in 1714, when Parliament passed that act, Watts took the occasion to write, based upon this psalm, one of the most familiar hymns in our hymn book. Do you know which one it is? It is, O God, our help in ages past. Our what? Hope for years to come. I can't think of a better message than that for where we are right now and what we face or potentially face down the road. We know those words, but I hope as we do our civil duties this week and we see all of the outcomes perhaps in a few weeks, who knows, but I hope that we will remember the words of that psalm. And not only that hymn, but the words of this hymn, this song before us in Psalm 90. This particular psalm is very unique. It's perhaps the oldest in the entire Psalter. And, of course, the superscription, if you have your Bibles there, it states that this is a prayer of Moses. And it's attributed to him. And most scholars believe that there is no doubt about the authorship. There's no reason to doubt it. And so, again, it is attributed to him. And if there was anyone who could document God's help through successive and tumultuous times, it would be Moses. Think of all that he had to go through and what he had to put up with and all the trials. Moses is certainly one who could adhere to the title of that song, O God, our help in ages past. And he was certainly a help in the years to come. And so we want to take the occasion for which we face and look at some of these things very quickly this evening. So I've divided this psalm into two parts. So if you're taking notes, here's what we're going to do. We're going to look in verses 1 through 12 at the God of help. And then the second part is verses 13 through 17, the God of hope. And very simple, but yet I think it speaks to where we are. I want us to keep these things in mind. And if the outcome and the things that happen and befall us in this nation are not what we would plan and not what we desire, we need to continue to remember that no matter what, we have a God who has been our help in ages past. There's no doubt about that. And my friends, there is no doubt about the fact that he is going to be our help in the ages to come. No matter what happens, we are his children. And the promises of God stand sure. The promises of God have not been erased or eradicated due to the political goings on in any nation at any time in history. God still has a plan, and God has a plan for us. So the God of help, and we look at several things. There are three things within three major things within this first section that we need to think about or concentrate upon. How is he a help? Well, in verse 1, we find out. Let's look at verse 1. Lord, thou hast been our dwelling place in all generations. So he looks back into the generations that had preceded, and he says, Lord, you have been our help. How is he a help? First of all, he is a protecting God. He is a protecting God. The word's dwelling place, it carries the idea of a refuge or protection. And I know that I speak to many who can look back in experiences in their life of the physical protection that God has given. But God also protects us from other things. You say, yes, but Pastor Gray, we may be affected by a lot of things depending on the outcome of the election on Tuesday. That's very true. But my friends, look, whatever happens to us, God allows. Whatever befalls us, God allows. We have to understand that he is still in control. He loves his children. He loves us as the sheep of his pasture. And he's not going to let anything come to us that he does not know about or allow. We need to understand that. He protects us. In all generations, as I said, indicates the past. And Moses, again, certainly could contemplate and knew the history of Israel and how Yahweh helped the children of Israel. Turn back, hold your finger in Psalm 90, and turn back to Deuteronomy 33 for just a moment. Deuteronomy chapter 33. I want to read some familiar verses here, but I think it's good to remind ourselves of the record or what Moses saw and observed about his holy God during the time that he led Israel. And of course, he is credited also with writing the Pentateuch, of which Deuteronomy is a part. And we notice in chapter 33, beginning in verse 27, these are some great, wonderful, and familiar verses to us. But in verse 27, it says, "The eternal God is thy refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he shall thrust out the enemy from before thee, and shall say, Destroy them. Israel then shall dwell in safety alone. The fountain of Jacob shall be upon the land of corn and wine. Also his heaven shall drop down dew. Happy art thou, O Israel, who is like unto thee, O people, saved by the Lord, the shield of thy help, and who is the sword of thy excellency? And thine enemies shall be found liars unto thee, and thou shalt tread upon their high places." Now I know that in context, that here he is writing about Israel getting ready to make that long trek into the promised land, of which they would eventually arrive, and they would reluctantly, in some cases, push out the enemies. But yet God is the God who's saying, look, I am with you. I am going to protect you. There were some in Israel, no doubt, in that nation that still doubted God. After he had reassured them numerous times, and he would do so again and again, even as they were going to the promised land, that he was going to protect them. It may not be the same situation, and the same scenario, obviously, but here is what we must understand. The same principle is true. We have the same God who has said, I will be with you. That same God is the one who promises his children today, right now, the same protection. Do we believe that? It's easy to say we do, but when the crisis moment comes, that is the true test, just like it was for Israel. If we are tested in the days to come, and we may be, and we may face some things that we never thought before, who knows? But we need to understand that, again, God's promises, as I said, are sure, they are right, they are true, and they will be fulfilled. God protects his people. Here's the second thing that we see in this section, and that is in verse 2. Before the mountains were brought forth, or ever thou hast formed the earth and the world, even from everlasting to everlasting. What are the last three words? Read them with me. Thou art God. Isn't that good? Thou art God. And so the second thing we see about the fact that God is the God of help is that he is an eternal God. He is an eternal God. Only a self-existent God can provide true help and hope for mankind. And so Moses hearkens back to what he recorded in Genesis 1:1 as he records and composes this song. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And this indicates that God not only created time, but he is not bound by time. He is eternal. And he reminds the people of that. The eternal God is our protector and our help. Spurgeon said, in this eternal one, there is a safe abode for the successive generations of men. If God himself were of yesterday, he would not be a suitable refuge for mortal men. If he could change and cease to be God, he would be but an uncertain dwelling place for his people. But the fact is that he doesn't change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He's the God that we can trust in, and he's the God of our help. I am reminded of the verse, and I think that we have mentioned this to you. We have preached on it. In fact, I think it was our verse for the year 2020. How appropriate. It says that God is a strong tower the righteous runneth into it and are safe. An appropriate verse for the year 2020, was it not? But it's appropriate for the days ahead as well. He's a strong tower. The righteous, they look at that strong tower and they run, they sprint to it, and they are safe. And I wonder what sometimes is our strong tower. What is it? It may be found in someone else. It may be found in things. It may be found in this or that. But my friends, listen. Jesus Christ, our God, our protector here that we're speaking of, He is that strong tower. And you need to run to Him when you start feeling down and you start feeling discouraged or you start feeling overwhelmed. He is our protector. And of course, as we said, He also is the eternal God. Here's the third thing, and this takes us in the larger part of this section from verse 3 down through verse 7, and that is this: He is a sovereign God. He is a sovereign God. Now, these points are not new or revelatory, but they are certainly ones that we need to remember. They're certainly ones that we need to call to our mind, and we need to have them at the forefront of our thinking always. That no matter what happens, it is not a surprise to a holy, eternal God. That He is sovereign over all things. And we notice that. Let's take the time to read these several verses here. Beginning in verse 3. Thou turnest man to destruction and sayest, Return, ye children of men, for 1,000 years in the sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as the watch in the night. Thou carriest them away as with a flood. They are as a sleep. In the morning they are like grass which groweth up. In the morning it flourisheth, and it groweth up, and in the evening it is cut down and withereth. For we are consumed by thine anger, and by thy wrath we are troubled. Thou hast set our iniquities before thee, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. The days of our years are 70, and if by reason of strength they be 80, yet is their strength labor and sorrow, for it is soon cut off, and we flieth away. Or we fly away. Who knoweth the power of thine anger? Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. Now, that's a very interesting passage. And I know some are saying, well, Pastor Gray, some of that doesn't sound very encouraging. Well, yes, it does, in the light of, again, what we're talking about as a whole. He is talking about, he's reflecting upon the sovereignty of God. And what goes along with God's sovereignty is God's power. And that is what we must understand. There are several things in this passage as well. Number one, we see that God, in verses 3 down through verse 6, God is infinite and man is finite. And that's a good reminder to us. God is infinite. Man is finite. Again, what are we seeing in our world around us? We are seeing, and it's very evident because, again, like I say, we can't get away from seeing it or reading about it in the news. But there are leaders in our world. We have some of them in our own nation. And they think that they have control of everything. And that by simple legislation or whatever it may be, that they can control the entire world. Now, that's not to say they can't have an influence. But it's very interesting that if the truth be told, the only power that they really possess is what God allows them to have. And God is still in control of this earth. I've been preaching for many years because when I first started out in 1998 or 97 here, it was just beginning to come out about global warming. Remember that? I'm sure you do. And of course, now they've gotten away from that term, and now it's climate change. And my response to that is, you know what? Ever since the world has been placed here by God, the climate's always changed. Who knows what the weather in what would have been ancient South Carolina 1,000 years ago? Who knows what the weather was? I loved it a few years ago when we had those pretty bad floods. You remember that? It was back in about, 2012 or something like that. And the officials came out, and our governor at the time said, this is a 1,000-year event. Well, how did she know that? That was who back in the day kept records in South Carolina 1,000 years ago? Who knows that? Nobody knows that. And yet we make all of these statements and all of these things. And here's where I'm going with this. Isn't it interesting again that we think, and this is across the world, the leaders think that if we get together and we just put forward some legislation and some restrictions and we do this and we do that, that man literally has the power to control the environment, the air, the atmosphere, and all of the things that go on in this earth that God Almighty created. We have the power to change it and to control it. And I'm here to say we have none of that. We have none of that. Listen, God is... We need not worry, because when he's through with the time that we have here, it's up to him, not us. We're on his timetable. And so we have got to understand that he is sovereign. Man is finite. What does he say again in verse 4? God is not bound by time, for 1,000 years in thy sight are but as yesterday when it is past, and as a watch in the night. It's nothing. God is not bound by time. Now, we cannot think outside of time. Have you ever tried to do that? You can't. You cannot think of what it's like to not be or have time. Try to do it, okay? Some of your eyes are going to go crossed, okay? You cannot think that way. It is impossible, because God has created us in time, and it's all planned out according to his timing. Now, one day we will be able to understand what it's like not to be bound in time, and where is that? When we're in heaven with him. And then we'll understand it, but not until then. But that shows who he is. He also says that man is like grass that flourishes for a short time and then vanishes away. And what is that an allusion to? It simply means this. Is that this speaks of the transitory nature of man's life. It's very reminiscent, is it not? And I'm sure perhaps you thought of the verse in James that life is a what? A vapor. That appeareth for a little while and is gone. Essentially, Moses is saying the same thing. He just uses a little bit different objects. The grass that comes, it flourishes, and then it's gone. And life is like that. It is here, and it is gone. And some of you out here know that when you get to a certain age, and I'm there, that you begin to reflect on your life, and you think, where did it go? Where did it go? Kelly and I talk often that, you know, it seems as if we should still have little ones running around the house. Because that time, it was so much fun, and yet it's gone, and we both also say this, thank the Lord that we don't. Okay. Because we also know that having grandchildren and watching them, that there is a purpose and a reason why God gives you little ones when you're young. Okay? And you grandparents, you know that. So God is wise even in that. I don't know. We look back and we think after the grandkids, you know, we spoil them, send them home. That's the philosophy of being a grandparent, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we look at each other and we say, how did we do this 3 times? man alive, that takes a lot of energy. Whew. And you just don't have it anymore. But that's by God's design. You see, life changes. And by the way, some of you who have little ones and you think, oh, will this stage ever end? And you feel like you're just in this forever stage and you're never going to get out of it to the next one. Look, you're going to, in a few years, look back and it's going to seem like a blur. It's going to go so fast. And then you go to the next stage in life and you look back and you say, how did we get here? It's quick. And again, saying all that, you know what? We'd better redeem the time because the days are evil. We'd better take advantage of every stage and every moment of life because it is important. There is a transitory nature of life. It is quick and it's gone. He's saying, look, you may live 70 or maybe 80 years at the most. God gives bonus years to some, and we have some of those here tonight. He says, but you'd better take account of it. And he's going to talk about that in a moment. So God is infinite. Man is finite. Even his life here on this earth is limited. And I want to say again, that's why, and I preach this to myself, let us be sure that while the things that surround us are significant and important, folks, we have got to get back to the mindset that while we're here, the most important thing is a mindset towards the eternal and not an obsession with the temporal. It's so easy to do, though. It is so easy to do. And I think, again, we are bombarded with the here and now. It's the here and now. It is this that's important. I was thinking about 4 years ago and the election and how it did not turn out for one side like they wanted it. And all of those who were literally weeping and wailing, and it was gnashing of teeth. And that's not an exaggeration at all. And I know we kind of get some humor out of that and so forth. But I think, to me, as I look back and I think on that, I think I have more pity for those people. And I feel sorry for a soul that is so wrapped up in who sits in the White House that is their entire life. What an empty soul. What an empty soul they must be to have that kind of reaction. And what it says is that they have nothing else. They have nothing else in their life for which to cling and to help, and they have no hope beyond the political process. My friends, I think that is a very sad life to live. And what I encourage us to do, by the way, is to pray for those people. And I know that we get a little humor out of it, but yet at the same time, I think that we should rather pray for them that they come to know the Lord. And as we'll talk about in just a moment, we're running out of time, but I'm going to go quickly here. Look, they need Christ as their Savior. And it is only He that can satisfy the soul. Look, again, and I speak to us as Christians, if we get stirred up to the point of turmoil, and we get to the point like some that we have seen and observed, that it affects us emotionally. And again, I've heard about those talking about within certain big corporations. There was one who was saying, yes, we had people in our big corporation that in the election of 2016, they were standing in the halls weeping because of the results. And I'm thinking, sad, tragic. These are people who have no hope beyond what they see in a process that one day, my friends, is going to go all away. Sad and tragic. We need to pray for the souls of men that they will come to know God. Well, in verses 7 through 12, here's the third aspect of this last point in this first section that tells us that God is the supreme judge. Now, here are some maybe difficult verses, and maybe we don't see them as positive in that sense, but yet again, here they are, and they speak to the sovereignty of God. I'm going to list them off for you. God is the supreme judge. In verse 7, there is the acknowledgement of God's wrath, his judgment. Now, we're talking about that. We're going to see that even more so in the book of Revelation. Secondly, there is the confession of man's sin. Listen, we will never get a perspective or a right perspective of God until we have a right perspective of ourselves. And that may be the biggest problem that we have in our nation and around the world. Man thinks of himself way more highly than he ought to think. The right perspective. And he is very forward, is he not, in verse 8. Thou, Lord, you have set our iniquities before thee. You see them, our secret sins in the light of thy countenance. Man thinks that he can have certain thoughts and certain ways and certain things when it comes to God, and they may be able to hide them from others, but you can't hide them from God. And yet, we try to do that. The third thing is the recognition of man's mortality, as we have been talking about. For all our days are passed away in thy wrath. We spend our years as a tale that is told. Man's mortality. Man's mortality. He is going to go by way of the grave if the Lord tarries. And we all will. I think one of the best object lessons that we can have is when we drive by a cemetery, the thought needs to be this. Is, where will my soul be when I die? Where will it be? That's why, again, and my family knows this, is that if I go to a funeral, and the preacher doesn't mention at all the gospel, it really, I'll just put it this way, I come home righteously indignant. And here's the reason why. I think that funerals are the prime opportunity to share the gospel of Christ. You know why? Because it is there where you have people who may not otherwise or have ever come to terms with the fact that they may be where this person is if they don't start thinking about their eternal soul. It's a prime time for them to think about their soul and eternity and where they will spend it. And it's interesting, over the decades that I have been doing funerals, and of course I've been to many as a child. My dad was a preacher, and I had a grandfather who was an undertaker, a mortician. So you can imagine how many funerals I've been to. And what I've noticed in the last several years is that very thing. They've gotten away from gospel preaching at funerals, and it's become, this is your life. And you know what? Some of that's not so bad. We should do that. That's why we have eulogies. But the main focus shouldn't be on this is your life. It should be what has become your life in Christ. What has he done? It should be focused on him. It should be focused on the fact that here is one, if they are a child of God, they are in heaven now rejoicing around the throne, and you had better be prepared for that same thing. And if you're not, you'd better think about it. Well, our days are passed away, and we spend our years as a tale that is told. We better come to terms with our mortality. And I know the young people are saying, well, Pastor, that is not something I really want to focus on. Well, you better think about it. You better think about it. God is sovereign over our lives. Here's the fourth thing, the admission of man's limited knowledge. The only place you find that, by the way, in really all literature is in the Bible. There are not too many other places where you're going to find man admitting that he doesn't know all that he thinks he knows. The Bible's very clear, though. Again, look at verse 11. Who knoweth the power of thine anger? He asked that question. Even according to thy fear, so is thy wrath. We do not know everything, but we serve the one who does. And here's the fifth thing. There's the petition to understand and take advantage of the time, as we were talking about earlier. Again, here's what one said. A short life should be wisely spent. We have not enough time at our disposal to justify in misspending a single quarter of an hour. Neither are we sure of enough of life to justify us in procrastinating for a moment. If we were wise in heart, we should see this, but mere head wisdom will not guide us aright. We'd better take advantage of the time and think about these things. Now let me give you the last three things from verses 13 down through verse 17. Now that is the God of help. Let me quickly give you the aspects or the principles of the God of hope. Here's number one. God satisfies his people, just what we were talking about earlier. Look at verse 14. Verse 14 says what? It says, Oh, satisfy us early with thy mercy, that we may be rejoice and be glad all our days. Christian, what truly satisfies you? What truly satisfies you? I think that if we were honest with ourselves, we would have to say that, well, many times it's the earthly things of this world that really gives me the satisfaction. And then it wears off and I have to do it again. Now, there's nothing wrong with buying things materially as we need them and can afford them. But here's the thing. If we buy things to give us that temporary satisfaction until it wears off and we have to buy it again, buy something else again, that's a problem. And what it says and what it speaks to is that ultimately our satisfaction comes not in a sovereign God, but in the materialism of the world. And there are many, many Christians like that. And it could be other things as well. But again, it's the temporary things. It gives us that thing that we have to go out and we have to buy, and that makes us feel good. And again, that might not be sinful. But we better make sure in our hearts that ultimately our satisfaction, no matter what, is in a sovereign God, our Father God, a holy God. He satisfies his people. And we sing songs about that. The satisfaction and the song that we sing, that gospel song that we had thirsted. And there's another song called Satisfied. And the question is, are we, Christian? Have we been satisfied by him? Well, here's the second thing, is that God reveals himself to his children. That is another reason why we should hope. Not only because he is the true thirst quencher, spiritually speaking. He is, again, spiritually speaking, the one who satisfies that hunger that we have in this life. He's the only one. And I know that I'm speaking, again, by the way, to some in here who can honestly say that. You've experienced, and sometimes, by the way, we experience it the hard way. We've done just that. We go and we do all those things, and yet they do not satisfy. And we have to come back and say, you know what, Lord? It's you. Hey, did you realize that one of the wisest men in the world had to learn this the hard way? If you go to the second chapter of Ecclesiastes, you're going to find there a very interesting process by which Solomon, the king, tried every single human avenue for satisfaction that is known to man, and none of it satisfied him. He had everything. And he records this in kind of a journal form. And in fact, the entire book of Ecclesiastes is almost like a diary. And he's recording all of these things and how he felt and how it affected him and so forth. And this great king, this one who had great intellect but didn't always use common sense, he comes to the end of all of that in the search for satisfaction. And what does he say? It's not found in all of the complicated philosophies of man. It's not found in the materialistic appetites of man. It is the simple formula of fear God and keep his commandments. And I wonder for some if that isn't anticlimactic. It can't be that simple, can it? Yes. Because there's a lot to it. There's a lot to it. That formula, I call it the spiritual godly formula, is almost like E equals MC squared. That doesn't seem like a whole lot, but you start getting into it, and it's far beyond my capabilities. And probably yours too, okay. Or maybe besides Brother Ken here. But I'm sure that most of us in here, we could understand some of it, but that little tiny formula, wow, what an influential formula that is. And on science and physics especially. But that formula at the end of Ecclesiastes, wow, how influential should that be for us as believers? What is the whole duty of man? Fear God and keep his commandments. And yet we find that so hard to do, so hard to accomplish. But Let me again go to the second thing. God reveals himself to his children. Look at verse 16 one more time. Let thy work appear unto thy children, and thy glory unto their children, the successive generations. Lord, show us thy glory. You know what? That is very similar to the same thing that Moses says in Exodus 33. When God passes by, you remember that? And he saw portions of a holy God. But there he says, Lord, show me thy glory. That should be our prayer too. Lord, reveal it to us. For Lord, that is our hope. That is what we place our trust in. It is not man. It is not what he can do. It is not what he thinks he can provide for us. It is God himself. Christian, you as a child of God, where's your hope? If it's in November 3rd and all of the outcome of that, that's a very shallow hope and a shallow faith. And I hope that we go beyond those things and that we do not see a regression in our attitude and our actions and all of those things, because we have to understand that God is who he is. And he has revealed himself to his children. Aren't you thankful that we have his revealed word? He has revealed himself in his word so that we may know him. What a wonderful God. And then thirdly, God favors his children. In verse 17 as we end, what a wonderful verse this is. And let the beauty of our Lord our God be upon us, and establish thou the work of our hands upon us. Yea, the work of our hands, establish thou it. God favors his children. Only God can bring present work and future aspirations, whatever they may be, to fruition. He's the only one that can do that. All of that to say again, the theme that runs through this psalm is the theme for which the great hymn writer Isaac Watts wrote. He saw this little thread running through this song. And what is it? Oh God, our help in ages past, because he's the eternal, timeless, self-existent one. He is our God, who is our hope for years to come. My friends, that's the God that we have. That's the God who is our Father. That's the God who is our loving shepherd. And He is not going to give up on that just because of what happens in a day or so. He's still going to be our God, our Father, and our shepherd. I hope that we'll believe.